Hey, what's going on, everybody? It's been a while between drinks, but we're back with episode 34 of the Hypermanic Noise podcast. So, if you listened to the last episode, shit's been hectic. I'm basically in the midst of a nervous breakdown at the moment. This is nervous breakdown, let's say, probably 2.5. I'm going to go as far as saying nervous breakdown number 3. So, yeah, quite fucked in the head, going through some shit, been in the funny farm. It's been an interesting journey. I'm going to do another podcast all about my experience in the funny farm. The last one was all about different tips on how to survive. And boy, was I wrong about that fucking hospital. My God, what a shithole. Couldn't have been more fucked. Couldn't have been more pointless. There's going to be a whole episode dedicated to that. Because at some point it'll be funny to me. And then I'll share it with you. So it's funny to all of us. But right now, I would just like to set the place on fire. So today, my guest is a good friend of mine, Mitchell Tinley. Mitchell's a fucking hilarious comedian. He's a morning radio guy in South Australia on Hit 96.1. We both started out doing comedy here. That's where we met. Host of the Mitchell and Michael podcast. Mitchell and Michael do their morning radio show together. He's a ring announcer for Eternal MMA. He's also the court announcer for the Willetton basketball team. Just a man of many talents. And fuck, if you thought I was ADD, Jesus Christ, between the two of us, I don't think we stay on one topic for very long, but it's a shitload of fun. We talk about his upcoming MMA fight, which is going to be interesting. We talked about confidence, his confidence, my lack thereof. He knew about my mental health issues. I filled him in on some of the backstory there. And yeah, we just had a good old chin wag and a good fucking laugh. I think Mitchell enjoyed it. Normally he's got to be nice and clean on the radio, but for this one, he got to be his dirty little self. He's a horrible human being. Guys, enjoy this. Mitchell Tinley's a fucking legend. The numbers for the show, even though I haven't put one out in a few weeks due to my mental instability and lack of ability to do podcasts in a psych ward, the numbers are fucking going crazy. The downloads are higher than ever. Fucking thank you. So many people have downloaded the mental health episodes, which I really, really do appreciate. They're the most important to me because I think, honestly, they're the most important. It's the most important aspect of fucking life, to be honest with you. Thanks, everybody that keeps tuning in. Please, if you haven't already, follow the page Hypermanic Noise on Facebook. Follow my comedy pages, Douglas Harvey on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all that shit. The podcast is now on Spotify, so please, wherever you listen to it, follow it, leave a positive comment, leave a 5-star rating, iTunes, YouTube, wherever the fuck you listen to it, say it's good, give it a thumbs up, give it a like, give it 5 stars, show your nana, rub your wiener in the shower while you listen, all those sort of things, they all help, and I'll be honest, gets me a little bit further away from the ledge. Alright guys, strap yourselves in for a laugh right with myself and Mr. Mitchell Tinley. Radio God, MMA legend, and all-round dickhead.
Podcast initiation complete. Warning, this episode may cause brain damage. Hypermanic noise.
Hey man, yeah, sorry, I'm on the radio desk. I thought it made it easier for you, but I'm very limited in skills.
That's all right, I'm limited in intelligence, so we're off to a good start.
Yes, that's the way I like to start it.
Yeah, I think it's a good professional way to get things going. Well, look, man, it's been a big couple of days for me. Yesterday, I got to talk to the guitarist from legendary metal band Anthrax, and today I get to talk to the biggest name in radio, Mitchell Tinley. I mean,
that's good because I don't know much about Anthrax, both the actual product and the band. So they seem like a big deal. You've made it seem like a big deal, just like I am to everyone else now because of
exactly.
You.
Yeah,
but really, I'm very low on the totem pole, but I'm glad you got to talk to Anthrax. Is it?
Yeah, that.
How does that work when everyone's like Anthrax is coming to town? Doesn't it scare everybody?
No more than the music, I guess.
Okay. Good point. Like when your parents are like, "Who are you going to go see?" You're like Anthrax. They're like, yeah. "Whoa, no."
Well, that's
the metal band.
Well, that's easier to explain than like, "Oh, I'm going to see Dying Fetus." Like what? Yeah,
that's a good point.
Yeah, so. man, you've got so many things fucking up in the air at the moment. Like you've just announced your first fight. Now let's get into that.
Yes, I got this motto of saying yes to things and then asking questions later.
Okay.
It's like when people go, "Wait, you want to do this?" I'm like, "Oh yeah," and then I go, "How am I going to do that?" but that's how I've done everything with media and stuff. But when it comes to MMA, it's sort of like a secret plan I've had for years. Ever since I started when I was in about 18, on and off, while I was still trying to make it to the NBA.
Yeah, of course.
A very small, under 6 foot white guy.
Yeah.
Proved difficult. But I had this little plan of fighting, like getting super famous from just anything and then leaving it all. Yeah, like Michael Jordan. Don't know how familiar you are with basketball, but how Michael Jordan.
I played as a kid.
Walked away from the NBA to go play baseball, and everyone was like, "Oh no, why is he doing that? He's crazy. He's insane." That's what I wanted to do, but with like media, and like as you know, there's not a lot of mainstream media guys that cover MMA or anything like that.
No.
So I actually wanted to keep it a secret for ages, my involvement in MMA, and then just kind of walk away and take a fight and just have everyone go like, "Oh my God, he's crazy. He's going to get killed." And then come out and just like tornado kick someone in the head. But it's kind of become a part of what I do.
Yeah.
You know?
So I've got a black belt in traditional jiu-jitsu, and one of the guys I did my black belt with, he fought Matt Hughes prior to his UFC title run. He fought him in rings in 2000 in Brisbane, of all places.
What?
So yeah, it's I've been doing jiu-jitsu for years, and I'm obsessed with MMA. So when I saw you had taken this fight, I was like, "Fuck yeah, let's talk about that. I want to hear your headspace going into this. Firstly, what's your fight name?"
Oh, definitely not going with a nickname because that's super lame.
It is.
But if someone gives me one, But I've seen a lot of guys recently do the whole like, "What should my nickname be?" And I know there's people out there that have nicknames, and that's cool. And you might be bigger and stronger than me and you can beat me up, and that's great too. But coming up with a nickname is super lame. If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
I think you should just go with blatant self-promotion and go, "Mitchell, the Mitchell and Michael Show Tinley."
I want to put my record in my name always. So my nickname's always changing. So it'll be like, right now it's Mitchell Undefeated Tinley, because I tell everyone I'm undefeated because technically, not lying,
that's
0-0 is undefeated.
That is true. Half truth is a whole lie. I learnt that in the church, but it's all good.
Does your audience know your backstory with that?
Yeah.
Ah, good. It's great. It's a great story.
Yeah, it's sort of. I mean, you know, like, I don't know how many orgasms you finished by crying and praying for forgiveness, but I've had hundreds.
Yes. Very different, but very different. I'm normally high five myself.
Yeah, cool. I mean, I hope you wash your hands first. I mean,
no, not at all. No, that's part of the joy.
So
I made my mess. I'm going to clean it up.
Yeah, yep. And reward yourself by putting it everywhere first. I think that's smart. Yeah.
This doesn't have to be radio friendly, does it?
No, fuck no.
Okay, cool. Because I've spent my whole life keeping things family friendly. It's nice to be able to break out.
Oh, dude, no. Go as dark as you want. Like, if you want to rant about any ethnicities, this is the place to do it.
I might keep that out only because, once again, I'm using the radio desk, which is currently going to air, and I'm scared I'm on air right now.
No, it's good. It's good. No, there's none of that shit on here anyway.
You said you're traditional jiu-jitsu. What's the difference, man, to Japanese or is it Japanese jiu-jitsu?
Yeah. So, well, BJJ came from judo.
Judo
came from jiu-jitsu. Basically, the style of jiu-jitsu I learnt, well, I would put it similar to Ronda Rousey's approach to fighting.
So you can't strike.
That was good. Like, I was good at closing the distance, fucking really good at throws, but transitions and shit on the ground, like, I could do the submissions, but the transitions between everything, I realized later on they were really weak in that. And, like, that's everything when you hit the ground. So it's basically, like, even now, I've got a bad back, I'm fat and I'm unfit. Like, I can,
I'm confident if some dickhead that doesn't know anything starts a fight, I can get him to the ground and punch him and just get out of there, you know. But it's like, if you put me just straight BJJ starting on the knees, I get mauled by a fucking blue belt, even if I was at my best then.
Yes, I see what you mean. It's very different though. Like, a lot of people with jiu-jitsus or grappling or whatever, they're so different. Like, I spent 6 to 8 years or so doing like catch wrestling. My whole style is catch wrestling.
Oh, sick.
And I mean, it's a jiu-jitsu blue belt, but it's like, I wore a gi for like 4 months and then never again. And then it's all top game wrestling and grappling like that. But now I'm training at like a 10th Planet affiliate gym in Mount Gambier, just because that's the Mount Gambier Grappling Club.
Yep.
Guy's got his purple belt, Matt Grubb, under Frankie Barker, who's a black belt under Eddie Bravo.
Yeah, I know Frankie.
And all that sort of stuff is great. They're almost completely different sports, man. It's it's quite intriguing. Like, yeah, it's cool. I get to be a bit of a badass and a bit, because I suck at wrestling, especially back in Perth. But here, I'm like the man. I'm like a bully, do neck cranks and forearms in the face, and I just get to really be the man. But they're all they work a lot on trucks and twisters. And when I was grappling in Perth, a twister was like almost like not real. No one would do one. No one could ever pull one off. If you pull one off, you were the greatest, and that guy had to leave the gym. Where twisters are part of the warm up in like Intense Planet. It's insane.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I think that's good. I mean, who's the guy you're fighting, by the way?
Mate, I have no idea. I'll tell you the story of it, right? Steve Kennedy's my coach in Perth, the Steamroller. Once again, given that nickname, didn't make it up himself.
Yep.
He's an absolute badass. He's a pioneer of Perth MMA. He's been around for years, fought in the UFC. Isn't the true representation of himself under the bright lights. Don't know why that is. He's an old school guy, so he's very injured and broken and whatnot. And he basically has trained me my whole life, off and on, throughout time. And so he knows what I can and can't do. And I've had a lot of issues with my body over the years, like I've got a slipped disc and things like that.
Yeah, me too.
Hopefully the commission isn't listening. But, yeah, I've got a lot of injuries like that where I really shouldn't be fighting at all, let alone grappling and stuff. And he knows what's up. And ever since I moved over here, I haven't been training as much, especially in MMA, so mainly jiu-jitsu. And we did a jiu-jitsu comp, like a little in-house comp, and I was like the only blue belt, and they're all other white belts. They're some good guys, and they're really good at leg locks and stuff like that, and I've always just neglected that stuff. And I lost this jiu-jitsu little in-house comp. Because there was only about 8 people that could even do a comp without being completely embarrassed. And I versed a girl. These are people I went through. I versed a girl that had just started. Baseball bat choked her like an absolute goon. I made a little girl in the crowd cry.
That's lovely.
I loved it. I enjoyed every minute of it. And then I had to go against a 120-kilo guy who's only been training for about 6 months. But when you're that big, it's very painful. And it was spent like 7 minutes on my back, and then the last 30 seconds face cranked him. So I was feeling great. Then I went up against the guy, the only guy that really gives me any trouble. And I was on top of him for 7 minutes. The last 30 seconds, he footlocked me, and I nearly let my foot break because I was so annoyed.
Oh.
So I was a bit devo, right? But I was like, don't get me wrong, I don't care about jiu-jitsu or jiu-jitsu comps or anything like that. So I didn't really care, and I was drunk the night before. Not making excuses, caught me. But you know what I mean? Like, that's where my brain was at. Like, I'm kind of almost on a holiday in training now, where Perth, I was kind of getting ready for fights. But the last 8 months, I've just been focusing on radio and whatnot. So I've just been chilling. And we all have this big team dinner after. And he gives me a call. My coach gives me a call after because he saw I lost. So he's obviously calling up to give me shit. Because that's how we roll.
Yep.
And he goes, yeah, mate, anyway, he's like, I'm doing this Wimp to Warrior thing, which is this course where people do like 22 weeks, like regular people. I think that they sell it as everyday people doing extraordinary things type thing. So they do 22 weeks of 5 days a week training. They've had no experience beforehand. And then they get in the cage at the finale and they get matched up with each other. Now, Steve said to me, he's like, Mitch, do you want to take a fight? And I said, without even thinking, I just said yes. Not because I'm a gangster, I like to think that, but more because I trust him.
Yeah.
And if he says I should fight, I guarantee he either knows I can win or at least knows like what's up. So I haven't been training MMA, or I wasn't at that time, for a good 8 months. So that kind of evens it out there, even though I've been doing on and off for years. Plus, he knows I was unfit. And I told him, because after I said yes, I said, but I think I'm ring announcing that event. Because as you know, I do the ring announcing yes. as well. And he said, well, I don't know what to do. And I was like, can I do both? Because it's always been a bit of a dream of mine
yeah.
to ring announce and then fight. Because a lot of ring announcers are just these fat, doughy guys with Taekwondo experience.
Yeah.
And none of them are actually have any sort of fight game credit. And I'm not saying I do, but I just know I have it more than they do. And
yeah.
so I'm like, man, that would be the most gangster thing in the world, to not only be a ring announcer and have fight experience, but to do it on the same fucking night.
Yeah, that's
and,
awesome.
And he was like, yep, let's try and make this happen. And so we got it cleared with the guy that asked me to ring announce, and they kind of ummed and ahed, but they eventually agreed. And so I was scheduled up to do that, and the guy was going to fight. I didn't even ask. He just said, my coach just said, what are you weighing? And I said, 73. He said, the guy's 79. And I went, ah, fuck it. Because 22 weeks of training is not going to be 8 years.
Yeah.
Like, yes, it's been on and off. I spent a lot of time doing basketball and things like that, comedy and radio and focusing on that. But I have 8 years of knowledge up in my brain and enough on my body to get it done. All I had to do was get fit. He said, the fight's in 5 weeks. Can you take it? I said, 100%. I only saw one photo of the guy about 2 days ago because Steve showed me.
Yeah.
Other than that, I have no idea what he looks like. Really, like it was a weird picture. Like I couldn't even tell who it was. He's a southpaw. He's 79 kilos, but he's got the same record as I do. And at the end of the day, it's a 2-round, 3-minute
exhibition match sort of thing.
That's to me. Sorry, I will never claim to be a fighter. Like I'm trying. My whole goal was to get super famous, walk away at age 30, take a pro MMA fight, main event card, sell it out. Legitimately, I know it sounds like a wanker, but that was my secret goal that I never told anybody.
Yeah.
Steve said, you want this fight? I said, fuck yeah. I'll never turn down a fight. I didn't even know it was against like a pleb. Yeah. If he's listening, I don't know who you are anyway, so I don't care. But if it was going to be against a real fighter, I'd still take that because I've got this weird sort of, it's not thrill. Like, it's not like, I don't like skydiving, right?
Mm.
I'm attracted to doing this thing that people can't do. You know, I want to do something that no one's ever done before, and there's not a lot of that left in life.
Yep.
Yeah. Everyone's done just about everything, but I can just about guarantee you there is not a man alive that has ever been a ring announcer and fought on the same night. I if I'm wrong, correct me.
The only thing I know of was Jeff Glover but that was an grappling. He was ring announcing for old mate Gracie's grappling thing, which I'm blanking on the name.
Yeah, look, Glover would eat me alive, but that, Mr. Glover, does not fucking count.
Okay.
That's grappling.
Well, you heard it here first. We're calling out everyone today. Jeff Glover. Mate. Kim Jong-un.
Well, okay, let's pull that back. Definitely not calling out Jeff Glover. Let's pull that right back. but everybody else, yes, I'm calling out every other ring announcer, yes. I actually wanted to fight another ring announcer. I thought that would have been fun.
Yeah,
And keep in mind, my shit talking is easily just to get myself motivated and I find it funny. You know me, I'm actually a very, I don't cause too much controversy. But I just think it's gangster as fuck to go do it.
Yeah,
and and look, it's not a real fight. Like, okay, if you've never done an MMA, it's a real fight. If you're in the MMA world, I will not claim to be one of them. I don't claim to be on the same level as even the amateurs at Eternal MMA. I don't, because I've got shin pads. I will have shin pads. I will have MMA gloves. There will be no elbows. There's no heel hooks. 2 3-minute rounds. If it's a draw, it goes to a third. And that's about it. The guy's a southpaw and he weighs 6 kilos more than me. If I was scared or if it was dangerous, I wouldn't fucking do it. It's glorified sparring, in a cage in front of a crowd. It's something we all do every 2-3 times a week. Yep. The only difference is there's a crowd.
Yeah, for sure, man. No, that's awesome. I always, when I moved to Perth initially, I was training to fight and then had my nervous breakdown and all that shit, and then my fucking black back blew out, and then I was starting to get back into it and start training again, and then I turned around at work once and hit my head on a pole, and I couldn't remember my name, the missus's name, couldn't remember anything for about 8 hours, and then I'm like, then I started to think about all the concussions I've had, and like we used to just get drunk, you know, Central Queensland, we'd get shit-faced, put the gloves on and just punch the fuck out of each other in the backyard. And there was one night where I had like 5 or 6 minor concussions in the one night. And
that reminds me of a story just quickly. Sorry, before I forget it because of concussions. When I first started doing jiu-jitsu years ago in like 2010, I did like 2 weeks, right? And I went back up to Darwin because that's where I was originally from. And I started to learn to fight in Perth. And I challenged my mate, who's like the blokiest bloke, like so good with girls. He was the fighter. I was the nerd. And I was like, bro, I know jiu-jitsu now. I got 2 weeks of jiu-jitsu. And my instructor, this Diego Cosoni, who's this like great black belt in Perth, told me a guy with a week of experience in jiu-jitsu is going to be better than someone with none. And I told my mate that we would fight. I would only use jiu-jitsu. He could punch me. And I was going to take him down and choke him out. He gave me like 4 concussions and I cried in a bath. So it might work for other people, but I think you need more than 2 weeks of jiu-jitsu to beat anybody.
I think so, yeah. I think you were pretty stupid in not throwing punches yourself.
Oh, mate, I thought I'd do like Hoist Gracie style. But like, you know, the Gracie challenge,
the old school
where I think it was Helio, one of them was just like, if they challenge jiu-jitsu, say they're karate guys and they want to go against the gym, they would tell like Hoist and all those to just take them down and choke them out. Yep. If they accepted that jiu-jitsu was better, you left it at that. If they then said, no, let's go again, he told them to take them down, beat the shit out of them, then choke them out.
Yep.
So that's, you know, I was doing the old jiu-jitsu, you know, the nice. It just, I happened to get concussions on the way through.
Oh, it's awesome.
I'm just stupid, mate. I'm just like, if it's a dumb thing to do, like, I'll do it, mate. Like, some of the risks I've taken in life with just zero payoff. You know what it's like.
I know what you mean, man. I looked up what killed Heath Ledger, like the drugs that killed him. And either Heath Ledger was a pussy, or I should have been dead 150 times because, holy shit, it was. I'm like, holy fuck, I've taken like 5 times more than that of this shit many times. I should be dead or mate, he's a pussy.
He had a broken heart as well. That was the main one. Didn't you know? Another side story. I got plenty of them.
Yeah.
He's, when I first started acting, when I was in high school in year 12, I lost an ABC3. Do you remember ABC3? It was like a trial channel.
Yep.
They had a sitcom called Mao.com, and I made it to the last thing to be the lead. It was about a robot who was like had 2 kids, and I was gonna be one of the kids. And I lost that role to Heath Ledger's cousin.
Oh.
Yep. I had like this despise for that kid just because he was related to Heath Ledger.
Well, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, mate, I've got plenty of side stories.
Oh, man, I'm ADD as shit, so we can go down rabbit holes all day.
Oh, man, my podcast, that's why I can't run my own podcast. I just be like, I got this guest in today. Speaking of today, I went to Kmart. At Kmart, like, I was just like, I can't do it, man. I can barely do it in radio.
Yeah. Well, at least you can throw off to a song and then you've got, you know, something cool to listen to, like the new Bieber song or some shit.
That's like, because obviously we've done stand-up comedy together. A lot of people think emceeing is like a skill. To me, it's like a fallback. Because if I have a shit joke or like it doesn't go as well, I know I'm supposed to bring you up to a hot crowd, but legitimately I can be like, you want to see your next act? And they'll go, woo!
Yeah, it's so easy.
You to get off stage.
Yeah, yeah.
It's I find it intriguing that it's like, where it's the same with like radio. if it's going crap, I'm like, oh, check out this new Ariana Grande Pink mashup with Post Malone and Ed Sheeran and Bieber's there. And then you just throw to that, where it's like, in a podcast, you just have to keep talking.
Yep. I hear you. Yeah. I would rather just hear you go on 400 tangents than any of those songs you just mentioned. But anyway.
Oh, mate, it kills me inside. I'll openly say it. Everyone knows.
I get it.
I'm here for the fame.
Well, dude, I would do the same thing. Like, my hope is to get into radio one day too. But I'll be honest with you. I would like to do that so that I could get more listeners of the podcast and make that go further. Because why the fuck would I want to do that? I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like,
if you
could just do your podcast and earn the same money, you wouldn't do radio. And but obviously, like, it just is what it is.
I totally get it, man. Like, radio has helped. I don't know what I love more. Radio is the most real. Like, when I'm talking, I get 3 minutes. Yeah, it's only 3 minutes, but I literally get to say whatever I want. Like, I can talk about my day. I can talk about anything. Stand up, you got to be a little bit more, like, unless you're emceeing or doing crowd work, you've got to have, like, written material.
Yeah.
Ring announcing, you've got to be perfect because, you know, it's not about you, it's about them and all that sort of stuff. Court announcing when I do basketball stuff and anything else, you know, there's nothing more real than radio. But at the end of the day, I'm in radio so I can get other jobs and I can make stand up. I can be more like a prolific, like, I can get more money doing other stuff. But at the end of the day, I'd love to do a podcast and just chat for 3 hours.
Yeah.
It's just the best thing. And yours is obviously killing it. And you're doing super, super good. So
can't wait for some money. That'd be nice.
Well, you got to get a sponsor, man. You get those weird sponsors where it's like, thanks to like Viagra shaving gel or like something weird. Like, it's always like there's companies like that that want to get on board.
I reckon an adult shop or like some sort of... you know, like child sex worker website or something. That'd be the only people that'd sponsor this shit.
Yeah, for sure. Because there's no way with even what we've talked about so far, you couldn't be like, the Wiggles concert coming to a town near you.
No.
Like, we'd have to be like, you know, a little bit deeper than that.
Yeah, like, I've recently found out there's a bondage club in Perth where you can go and you can pay for people to piss on you and all this sort of stuff. Like, perfect sponsor for this show.
I get that done from the higher ups anyway. They piss on me anyway.
Well,
stuff the Bieber song.
Yeah, well, there you go. So your start in radio, you started over here on Hit 92.9. You and Michael were doing the your weekend show, just an hour a week. And now you're based in Mount Gambier on Hit 96.1, doing the morning show from 6 to 9. How was that? Like, as you know, just obviously, you've done, like myself, you know, I'm from Queensland, moved over here. You've done a bit of moving around. Like, did you find it hard to settle in? And were you fucking shitting yourself at the start of it?
Yeah, it's that similar thing of what I was saying earlier. Just say yes, ask questions later, and good things will happen. And I hate to quote We Bought a Zoo with Matt Damon, but he says something where it's like just a few moments of bravery will... like, I promise you good things will happen. And that's kind of how I go at anything. And that's like, it's not being a motivational dweeb or anything. That's legitimate. Like, whatever you're doing in life, you think about it, you're hooking up with a girl and you're like, should I put my hands there? You know, like, if you just go, okay, I'm going to talk to her, or I'm going to do this, or, you know what, 2 pills. You know, like, good things happen. Like, good things happen in situations like that. It's a little bit of bravery. And that's how I've done it with Perth. Moved away from Darwin when I was 18, or 17, sorry, did year 11 and 12. And I didn't really know what I wanted to do in life, but I just knew that if I was a doctor, I was going to be a funny doctor. You know, if I was a lawyer, I was going to be the funny lawyer. Yeah. Whatever I was doing, I was going to be the funny guy. So I wanted to get into stand-up, and I got into stand-up first. And I went, fuck, there's no way I can make any money. Like, as you know, it takes at least 5 years or so to even get a $20 check for a gig. And it's just way too hard to do that stuff. And the dream as a comedian is to get work doing comedy.
Yep.
The only thing I wanted to do in life was have this stuff pay my bills. I don't need to be rich. I just don't want a real job. I fear a real job. If you have a real job, I don't talk shit about you. I envy you.
Me too.
Because you have the ability to do a real job. I do not. It's not saying like, oh, you have the ability to be a clog in the wheel. don't mean it like that. I mean it like you can actually, you are strong enough to get through that hard day because you're doing it for your family or whatever it is. I can't. I'd quit like a little bitch. I've done it in a real job. I can't do it. So radio is what I wanted to get into because I was like, it'll get my parents off my back. I'll go to uni and I'll just fuck around and then I'll figure out what I want to do. And I got into uni, did the radio course at Murdoch. I think I was telling you about that, Murdoch Uni.
Yeah.
And what they, the course was so shit. Like, let me just...
I'm not surprised.
With them. Yeah, it was just so crap. Like, you had to do electives, and I had to do a drawing class, which is legitimately...
That's really useful for radio.
Exactly. Yeah, I failed it 3 times.
Yeah.
it was just horrendous. And I made it through my degree, and I ended up in a radio class before we graduated, and you had to get in pairs, like get in groups to sort of do mock shows, yeah. Like pretend shows for the class. And me and Michael, who's my co-host now, was the last people picked. Like we didn't have a group, so we just got put together.
Isn't that funny?
It's hilarious. And we got on like a house on fire. Like he's a little nerdy, dweeby guy who's just like super judgy, and he's like a great dude, but like he's just a dork, and I'm a dork, but in a different way.
Yeah.
And we had a show together, and about a year we kind of mucked around after the class finished, and then we started to think it was pretty good because certain people that like his parents are pretty honest, my parents are pretty honest of going like if it's crap they'll tell you, yeah. You know. And my dad said to me one day, he goes, you know, mate, it's actually not too bad. And I was like, well, that's good enough. And then we just shopped it around. You know, we're like, oh, we're the Mitchell and Michael Show. Here's a folder of all our segments. Here's some guests we've had on. Here's a demo. Like, that's that style. Like, as if, I don't know if that's how bands work.
But yeah, it
like
is.
Yeah, similar thing. Just trying to get someone to listen to your demo. Like, I was a rapper in New York with my mixtape.
Yep.
Like, I was just like, have a listen. And everyone turned us down. Like, mate, everyone. RTR. Mm-hmm. Fuck RTR. Fuck RTR.
Oh, that can get fucked. Yeah, don't worry about that.
I'll say that with a passion. Mm. 6IX, they can get fucked. 6PR can get fucked. Nova can get fucked. There's also, who else we got? Who else can get fucked? 96FM.
Mm-hmm.
Guy called Jeff Watts helped us out, like tried to help us out, and then just completely flicked the switch on us. He was an absolute cockhead. But we ended up getting a genius called Mike Fitzpatrick, who runs head of content of Triple M. If you're in radio or media or of any sort and you want to make it, you go and learn who this guy is. He's the guy that had to fire Barry Hall the other day. I don't know if you heard about that.
No, I missed that.
Barry Hall, the footballer, was on like the grill or was doing like some for the AFL, the Triple M do this thing in Melbourne where, you know, they kind of like they're kind of commentating the game, but also sort of almost like they're doing a fight companion, but for the AFL.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it was Lee Montagna said something about the sort of like his wife going into labor or something. And Barry Hall, like I won't go too graphic, but Barry Hall basically said something about, like, hope the doctor doesn't lick his fingers. Or he said something like that. And it was on live on radio. Like, not what we're doing now. It was, like, live, live, live.
Yeah,
and,
I probably shouldn't do that. I'm not in, you know, I've worked that one out already.
Yeah, and Mike Fitzpatrick had to fire him. But so, like, he's, like, the top of the top guys. So for two dudes that weren't even in radio, he shouldn't have even responded to us. But he did.
Cool.
And he said, he called us the next day, and he said, where do you want to work? I was like, I'm sorry, what? He's like, where do you want to work? I was like, well, we live in Perth. And he was like, well, all right, cool. I'll get you 92.9. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? And then he was like, all right, talk to you later. Next day, job at 92.9.
Sick.
Simple as that. It's like, you know how they say in the business, like, it's not what you know, it's who you know?
That's everything, man.
100%. Yeah. I 100% agree with it. However, you can find out who you need to know. And go fucking know them.
Yeah, well, like when I started out in my band, right? There was it was run by the councils, like a development session for young musicians, and the band The Butterfly Effect came up to Central Queensland, and me and my mate Tim,
who I didn't know at the time, we met there at this thing. And this is 2004, I think. And we met there, started putting on shows together. He now runs this online metal station called The Faction. And he's like, he's been at the Arias the last 2 years. He had dinner with John Farnham recently. He's been a guest on the show. So he starts this his station. He's like, oh, dude, I need people to interview bands. So I'm getting to interview like Steel Panther, Anthrax, like all the who's who of metal, basically everyone just under Metallica level. And when I'm talking about Anthrax in the 80s, they call them the Big Four. There was Metallica, Megadeth, Slayer, and Anthrax were the Big Four. So all these years later, you know, it's people, and it's not just a matter of like, there's a lot of fucking suckasses, especially in comedy, that just go around trying to lick everybody's balls to climb their way up the ladder. But if you form lasting fucking friendships, you do the right thing by people, that shit does come back. Like, I haven't had to buy a concert ticket for years.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, shit like that. And it's, but I've also worked hundreds of hours for free for people for years.
Oh, I cannot stress that enough. Like, radio, comedy, even ring announcing and all that sort of stuff, like the basketball court announcing, anything that where someone has eventually ended up giving me money and giving me a microphone and said, go nuts, go make this a night to remember. I did the first one for free, or the second one for free. Or in comedy, like I just flew back to Perth. I did two gigs flying from Mount Gambier to back to Perth. I did two gigs. It paid for my flights back. Now, have I made it yet? No, I'm not killing it. I'm not making tons of money, but I'm now at least getting to do things like that, like fly back, and that's getting paid for. You know, the ring announcing, Eternal MMA flies me there. I don't make a shit ton of money. You know, maybe I get 200, 300 bucks at the end of the night. But if you count that flight, it's like 1,300 bucks all up, or things like that.
Yep.
And comedy, like with Perth Comedy Festival and Fringe Festival, like you pull in maybe 1,000 bucks, but that's after 6 years of comedy. You have to do shit for free. I'm on, I'll tell you now, radio. I'm only on about $47,000. Yeah. Like it's a fucking full-time job. We work like 12 hours a day. We do this shit because we love it. But at the end of the day, it's a fucking dream job. And I'm still just making $47,000. When I was working at 92.9, you might have some listeners that are in Perth or wherever they are. It was fucking the top station. Like wherever you are, think of your top state, your top radio station. 92 is basically that. We were there for 2 years. We were doing first Saturday mornings, like 5 to 7 a.m. So a fucking graveyard shift type thing. Getting up at 3 in the morning, losing my Friday. I was making $100 then. And then we went to Tuesdays and Thursdays, 10 to 12 p.m. at night, making about $180 for that. Then they moved us to 11 to 1 a.m. both those days. We got bumped because of like a national show. And then we got bumped again because there was another national show. And they found a spot 6 to 8 p.m. on Sunday. But check this. So that's an amazing spot, right? Like if you're watching TV 6 to 8 p.m. on a Sunday, like that's a good spot, you know? So it's not horrible. In radio, it was like a pretty amazing spot and they started to really like us. And this was in like our second year of radio. And how that sort of ended up working is the money, they didn't want to pay us to do our show live. So we had to pre-record it on Thursday and they would only pay us 4 hours. That show took us 10 hours. To produce, to come up with. Michael was working 70 hours a week at another job. I'd quit my job to focus on radio so we could hopefully get this gig we've got now. And we made $100 from a $700 million company.
Yep.
That's not me complaining. We didn't fucking deserve that money. Like,
no, that's just what it is.
I would have done that shit for free. It's the fucking things people need to, whoever you are listening out there or whatever it is, if you want to get into something and you're like, oh, they're only giving me $20. Like, yes, don't get fucking taken through the ringer. You know, don't get taken advantage of. But just know what you're doing and why you're doing it. Like, you are doing it. It's the end goal that you're out for, you know. Like, all these podcasts that you're doing for free or whatever it is now, you're doing it so you can eventually, hopefully, pick up a sponsor and just make a little bit of money to support yourself. So all you have to do is do podcasts, you know.
Yeah.
We do this shit for the outcome type thing. If you think of just where you are right now, yeah, you might get your $100, but you know what? They're not going to fucking invite you back.
No, that's it. And everybody looks at, they look at the, so they look at Michael Jordan and say, oh, I can earn $1 billion. Or they look at Justin Bieber. It's like, even those pricks started off fucking broke, doing what everybody did, unless your father or someone was Ozzy Osbourne, like Kelly Osbourne had a single. But even she had the guts to say, look, I only have this album because of who my dad is. What am I going to do, though? Turn it down?
Oh, but and going back to fucking Justin Bieber, that motherfucker was busking on the streets of Canada.
Yep.
And everyone thinks he got big through that. It was through fucking YouTube. So him busking on the street, you think YouTube was paying him? They weren't paying shit back then.
Nope.
He was busking as a 12-year-old kid out in the fucking cold. He's earned the $100 million and the Ferraris and the attractive women.
Yes.
He has earned that shit. It's people just want it handed to them. And I get it. Like, you want to work hard. It's like, I've done a podcast before too, obviously with the show and stuff. You are constantly checking those numbers, right? It's not because you're narcissistic. It's because you want to... You want to hope that what you're putting out, people are liking, you know?
Yeah, 100%.
The same sort of thing. I'll probably ask you how this went. You know, it's just a natural thing to do.
Yeah.
And sometimes we get paid in that, you know?
Yeah, that's it.
And you're doing it for the love. Like, at the end of the day, I would have this same conversation with you if it wasn't fucking recorded and a podcast. Okay, I would anyway. I just enjoy the chat. So at the end of the day, if you love what you're doing, that's the gift. If you make money on top, awesome. If you're doing it to make money, I mean, it's fucking cliche, but if you're doing it to make money, you're a fucking idiot.
Yeah, and you know what? Especially in the music industry, I've realized how few artists, especially like in the rock metal genre, actually make enough to live off their art. So
exactly. The I amount know Metallica. Of them, that's it.
Yeah,
you know?
It breaks it like... Like in Australia, you've got Parkway Drive. They would be making a deep. So I reckon, with what I know on how bands get paid and shit for these sort of tours, I reckon each one of those guys is maybe on 100 to 150K a year. Like, that's a good wicket. But every other band, even like these bands that have been around for 30 years, will come out from the States. They'll tour here. They'll play to 500 to 1,000 people a night. A lot of them go home and work on oil rigs. They fucking work at service stations. They do gyp rocking.
Yeah, going back to my coach, Steve Kennedy in Perth, that guy was in the fucking UFC.
Yeah.
And he lost money. Like he, and that's got nothing to do with the UFC. Like that's just, who cares? Like if people aren't clamoring to give you money, why should they give you money? You know, like it's when you really think about it, like, here's the thing, this probably made me unpopular, but you know how people say like local business, support local, like fuck that shit. Have a good product.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? People want to help you in general, but if your friends are just fucking helping you because they're your friends, it's not going anywhere. And it's the same sort of thing with like, the metal music, like, yeah, you need a bit of a boost to start, or, you know, like maybe I listen to one of your songs and I'm like, ah, it's all right, but it's not the best. And maybe I give it a little share. But it's like, if I'm really carrying you through it, like you've got just a shit song and I'm like, oh, I'm going to help you or give you money. Like it doesn't help. You just bleed each other dry and it creates all these artists. I don't know what the metal scene's like, but I know what the radio scene and the comedy scene's like, where there's people that fucking think they're good and they're not. And fuck, I might be one of them. But like,
I've seen crowds laugh at you. Now, I'm going to beep the name out, but that little fuckhead Ziggy, for instance. How the fuck can you be that unaware? How can you...
Also, hey, don't be a bitch. Don't beep it out.
Okay, leave it in. Fuck it. He knows I hate him. But, but it's like, how can you do gig after gig after gig after gig and have no crowd response and keep doing it?
I think there's a level of insanity there that almost impresses me. Like,
I think it's like sociopathic to a level. Like there's a disjointed there's no touch with reality, because if you or I fuck up one line, we'll come off and everyone will say, that was killer. And you'll be like, no, I fucked up the tagline on this joke.
Mate, we did that gig at fucking the Fringe Festival in Perth, where I emceed that and you ended up being sick. I fucking ate so much shit that night. But it's like, and that kept me up. It still keeps me up now. Yeah. Every bad gig I've ever done keeps me up. But it's like, I know what you mean. Like, there are some people that are just have lost touch with reality in terms of that. Like, I'm a very lazy stand-up comedian. Like, I've worked hard and with writing and stuff in the past, but I'm quite lazy with it. Like, I really am. And so if a gig goes bad, I have no one to blame but myself. But there are guys out there, and I guess more power to them, but they fucking write like hours a day. They get up every day, every week, and they still fucking suck. And I don't want to hate on them, but it's like, I did that. I think it, like, people say to me, that's not fair, like, in terms of, like, Mitch, you've got, like, say, a natural gift at comedy. It's not fair that you don't work hard, they work hard, and you're more successful, or whatever it is. However, I'm not a big fan of karma, but I do believe, like, you know, some shit does come back around, or if all your effort's going into this and it's not paying off, put your effort into something else. I spent 12 years, longer, 15 years, trying to make it to the NBA. I'm not kidding. Like, it sounds like a joke, but I legitimately thought I could get there. I was that fucking...
Dude, me too. I'm not kidding either. I played rep grade from my town. Like, I was obsessed. It's all I dreamed about, all I thought about. Yeah. Basketball.
Bro, I was getting cut from Northern Territory basketball teams. We had fucking 17 people try out. I got cut, right? And I thought I was going to make it in the NBA. That's the level of insanity, I think, by the way, you sort of have to have to make it in anything. But I wasted, I wasted hours and hours of my life sometimes shooting, going to the gym, doing jump programs, sprints, watching videos on how to get better. And I spent 15 years wasting my life trying to make it to basketball. Yeah, it taught me some resilience and all that sort of stuff. But at the end of the day, it didn't really help me. Or even though I could put the ball in the hoop, it's like, how did that help me outside of life? So I walked away and put all my effort into this thing that I was fucking naturally good at and didn't have to try out. And that was comedy. And I haven't looked back. You know, radio's been killing it. Anything I touch, but without sounding like a douchebag, anything I touch now, I'm fucking great at. But I think I earned it in terms of, like, yeah, I didn't earn it with comedy, as in, like, I don't stay up all night writing and stuff like that. Or, you know me, I'll just come up with an idea and just fucking talk on stage for 20 minutes and it will sound like it's a fucking set.
Mm.
But the thing with it is, it's like, I earned it through all the failures in basketball, all the wasted hours where I was putting in hours and turning down parties and drugs, and I didn't drink for fucking most of my teenage years after a while.
Yep.
And I didn't do any drugs, no pills, no weed, no
me
nothing.
Either.
I really wanted to make it in basketball, and my mates would come to the tryouts for the team, fucking hungover, some of them still high, would kill it, play more minutes than me, dominate, and I'd sit on the bench waving my towel. And that broke me as a child. Like, it legitimately broke me. Like, I wasn't abused or anything. I didn't get beat up at home. I had a pretty easy life in terms of, like, family. But that fucking broke me as a kid. And I think I earned everything else I've got in life from that.
Yeah, I hear you, man. And it's like, so I had the same realization, and I'm like, this isn't going to happen. And there was guys in my team that went on to play for the Wildcats, 36ers, got college scholarships. And I was in the B team, which was just the leftover shit kids. And it just never worked. So then I realized I had a gift for music. So, you know, we got fucking, two of my songs were finalists in the Q Song Awards, which is like the whammies of Queensland. And
You
know, I got interviewed by Cram from Spiderbait. We're on MTV. On the radio, like, we were starting to get all this momentum. Problem in a band is you don't just rely on you. You rely on those other four fuckwits in your band. And you know what I'm saying? Like, when they can't get their shit together and we're getting offered these big gigs, these big tours, and we can't do it because I can't get $100 together to, you know, it's like, fuck you.
That's the thing. That's that team thing. It's the same in basketball too. dealing with the team is the fact that you've got to rely on other people. That's why I'm so happy with Michael with radio. Is the dude thinks like me. We might be completely different. You know, I go out on the weekend. Speaking of which, he's going to come in and just grab his bag. He'll come in any sec, so he might disrupt us. But he thinks just like me. Yeah. You know, he wants to take them all out. You know, he wants to kill teams. Like, we're very jovial and all we do is laugh on our show. But we are ruthless off air, and you've got to be in terms of, like, we know what we are. You know, we know what we've got to get better at, but we know where we're good. And we go after it. And I'll message people that we've met people in the industry that other teams couldn't dream of meeting, you know, and we act like that. And I'm lucky because in a duo, you don't sometimes get that because the way radio works. Anyway, Michael's coming in. Come in, buddy. Sorry, mate. I'm still podcasting.
What's up?
Say hello, Michael.
Hello.
Hello, Michael. How you doing?
My mate Hayden. And he's...
G'day, Hayden.
And he's got like thousands of listeners on his podcast. It's like a heavy metal podcast.
Yeah.
Michael's in a band.
Is he?
I was, yeah. We were called The Removalists.
That sounds like a really good name.
Yes. I think at one stage it was Humanity. But like spelled like human titties. It was funny.
What sort of band was it?
What sort of band were you, Michael? Garage rock.
Okay.
Just rock in the garage.
Cool.
But no, it was good. It was a good band. I remember him plugging it.
All right. That's good to know. I'm glad you did well.
I broke up. I Yoko'd the band.
Did you?
We had to move here, and his band was like, oh, no, the band is gone. Isn't that right? Are they still together? Defunct.
They held them together.
Yeah, Michael held them together. He's like the glue. I was like, guys, we're going to rehearse at this time and all that sort of stuff. And I think they didn't want to be a part of it.
I'll tell you what. Same thing happened with my band at the end. Half the guys.
Hi, Michael. Michael's
see
up.
You, bro.
I'll see you tonight.
One of the guys in our band. So three of them started like this black metal band, which is like Cradle of Filth, just extreme, and different bass player. And they put all their effort into that. It just detracted from all the momentum we had in our band, so it just fizzled out. And then the bass player of that band killed someone. So
what?
It's like, and then I had to turn him in. That's when my whole fucking crazy story all started.
Holy shit, what happened there? Just give me a quick rundown.
Haven't you heard that before?
No, I've never heard that story.
Oh, so 2010, my mate, his missus wanted to die. And they were very unwell, obviously, living in the bush. She'd asked her ex to kill her. She'd asked family members to kill her. She just was a troubled kid. And I get it. I've been suicidal most of my life. I legitimately got out of a psych ward about 10 days ago.
Yeah.
I'm not in the great spot.
Yeah, we've talked about that before.
Yeah, so... And I've got a very fractured identity because 10 days ago I was in a psych ward and you probably wouldn't have known until I told you right now. But, she begged him to kill her and he fucking did it. And, they were in Queensland. He told six people before he told me cause he was crying out for help. And then it took me in Perth to sack up. And then I got flown back to fucking Queensland on 8 hours notice and was like, recording tap phone calls to put one of my best mates in prison for murder.
Why did you have to do that? Like, why did, obviously that's bad, you know, in terms of like the euthanasia and whatnot.
Yeah.
But why did you have to do that?
Because he wouldn't, well, I'll put it this way. He was planning to go out to her body and do it because she talked him into going with her. And
yep.
I don't really go into details, but I'll put it because of how she wanted to go, it was far more graphic than he expected, I think.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Certain horror movies you see have got it nailed, I'll put it that way.
What? So, why would you do that? Sorry, dude, tell me if I'm fucking prying too much, but...
Using a knife, things like that.
Jesus.
Yeah, so anyway, he did it, and then he told six people back home, and none of them did anything. And then he told me, and I'm like, I've got to fucking do something. He can't deal with the guilt of this. And he has done the wrong thing for oddly the right reason. But like, he's not going to, I know him. If you said list all the people you know that have the ability to kill, right? He would be on the other end of that list. I would let him babysit my kids. The nicest, he was always a tripper off with the fairies, but the most beautiful soul, as gay as that sounds, just the greatest dude. And always had time for me, always fucking helped me out. Just, I love him like a brother, and I still do to this day. And yeah, so I had to decide, like, am I going to turn him in, or and I did. And if I
but
had
it's more that turning him in to help type thing.
Yeah, well, he's thanked me for it from prison.
Oh, okay. What's the deal with that? Like, did he do time, or?
Yeah, he's still there. He got a life sentence. And at his trial, like, I was on the stand. I was the key witness. Like, I was on the stand for 45 minutes at his murder trial. So, yes, crazy, man. Just, but his mum came up to me and said, look, if you didn't do what you did, no one would know what happened. My son would be dead. She would be dead. They probably never would have found him. And her family would never have closure. So,
dude, that's a fucking movie.
Yeah,
that's,
I know.
That's insane.
Well, that's what precipitated my first nervous breakdown. And
I can fucking see. Like, once my mate kissed my other mate's girlfriend, that's like that's what I was dealing with. Jesus.
But yes, it's fun. It's like, it's all that shit. Then because of that, I lost my house. I went bankrupt. It's just, you know, there was a cacophony of shit. My van got destroyed the same week. And to top it all off, the night that he told me, my housemate got home and I said, dude, well, to one of them, I've actually got a whole bit about this in my act now, but one of them I told, he's like, I'm too high for this, and just walked into his room. I'm like, thanks, mate. And he's a piece of shit. Fuck you, Jake Rolfe. I hope you die in a fire, you fucking cunt. Anyway, the other guy, the other guy comes home and he says, oh man, have some acid. And at this point I've smoked a little bit of pot, nothing else. And I'm like, dude,
really?
This is the worst day of my life. Like, I'm trying to decide whether I have to, whether he's just having a bad trip. This is not something he would ever do. Like, he goes, oh no, you'll feel better. I'm like, okay. So then I had that and ecstasy, both for the first time. And because we talked online, I had, like, at that point, 30 pages, I think, of brutal detailed murder confession, which I was reading over and over again on fucking acid. So needless to say, I stopped believing in God that night. And it all went downhill from there.
That is insanity.
That's brutal, man.
That's a lot to deal with, bro.
Yeah, no wonder I'm fucked in the head.
How the fuck did we get onto talking about this?
I don't know. It happens sometimes.
The fuck? That's insane. That's a way better side story, though.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I've gone into it a few times on the show, like different aspects of it. It's But it sort of just comes out, and I forget how absurd it is because I've had to talk about it to so many cops, so many doctors, so many psychologists, and I'll just drop little things like that, or I'll say something like, "Oh, you know, when my dad overdosed when I was fucking two months out of my high school senior exams, and I had to make sure he didn't die while the ambulance got there and all that," and then they're like, "What? Yeah. That's fucking brutal." I'm like, "Oh, I didn't even notice because it's just one of many things like that."
Well, that's one of the things too. Like, I mean, we were just talking about me in a very narcissistic manner of going like, how did I get here and how did I do what I'm doing and whatnot. And it's fucking, I'm so blessed. Like, I hate saying blessed, but I'm so lucky with my parents and my life. They gave me the opportunity to do any of this shit. So yeah, it's all about thinking a certain way and putting in the effort and all that sort of shit. But it's like, man, the life I had was the most 25-year-old straight white male life you've ever sort of. The only thing I had to make sure is that, like, girls were saying consent. Like, other than that, like, I've not had a whole lot to worry about. Growing up in Darwin, there's a few fights here and there and whatnot, but it's like, I've had a pretty fucking easy life. And when I hear people, like, the shit some people have to go through, like you said, like, dad ODing or whatever it is, it's like, I never had to worry about that. And I always make sure, before I judge anyone, I always think back to that. Yeah. I always go, you know what? They didn't have an easy life. You know what I mean? It's a lot of that. Because I used to be real quite judgy. I'm quite a black and white person sometimes with going like, you know, say someone does drugs or whatever it is, and you get the whole like, oh, it's a choice. You deserve it. You know, you could have said no. You knew what they did. All that sort of shit. I always go, mate, I was never in their situations. Like, I used to be a bit of a jerk about it. One of my mates said to me, and they're like, mate, they didn't have as an easy life as you did. And ever since he said that, it just really woke me up. And that was like 10 years ago. So I'm always well aware of whoever's going through shit. I never judge them. I mean, look, they could have come from the same situation and just made shit choices, but I don't know, so I can never judge it. It's the same with depression and all that sort of stuff. I don't fucking understand it, right? I'm not in that. Just like you are born with the ability, like the gift of being tall or fucking handsome or quick-witted or smart, I think you are born with the gift of mental stability and the ability to get through tough times and think positively. I have been given that, I think. Who knows? I could go fucking crazy next week. But right now, I am fine. You know what I mean? I have this great positive outlook. Something bad happens to me, I go, that's a fucking story. I'm going to tell that on my show. You know?
Yep.
And I think that's a gift, and I shouldn't judge others for not having that. I should just be proud and happy I do. Because your Facebook, not yours, but just anyone's Facebook, is always full of fucking depression memes or anxiety. Everyone has anxiety now. You know? Everyone has depression. I could just sit back and go, oh, fucking everyone has it now. Maybe you're just having a bad day. Or I could be just the luckiest cunt in the world and be the only one that doesn't have it. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, I get it. I get it.
Like, it's that whole new outlook of life. And instead of going like, oh, this generation or people doing it to themselves or, you know, people that can't sleep but fucking watch shit on their computer all night. It's like, that might have something to do with it. Or they're watching shit on their computer because they can't fucking sleep. You know, it's like, yes, I can say it's easy to just get out there and exercise and all that sort of shit. But like I said, I've had the most 25-year-old white straight male life ever. I'm been gifted with the ability to think positively and take chances and be confident and all that sort of shit.
See, it's weird, man. I'm completely different to you. Like, and we're both sort of doing the same shit.
Yeah.
But for me, I have no confidence. I hate doing stand. I love.
Oh, I know. I've been out the back with you.
Yeah.
And you fucking want to run away.
Yeah. I did a show 3 days after getting out of the psych ward. Like, just
great material though.
I just talked about being in the psych ward. And
what did you talk about? Was it like Jerry Seinfeld style? Like, what's the deal with psych food?
No, I talked about a guy that who ran through the hospital on his Harley Davidson because he was trying to kill the woman who runs it. He told me that story on my first or second day there.
That's fucking, I mean, you know, very serious, but also hilarious.
It is. It was pretty good. It helped me through some times in there. But like, for me, it's, and I that's one thing I want out of this podcast in general is to be very open about being fucked in the head because there is so much stigma about it. People have an aversion to taking medications and absolutely don't take them if you don't need them. But if you do, it might help you for a bit. Then you don't need them and then you get through it. Same. I used to be the same with drugs, militant anti-drugs. Now I'm a drug addict. Like, and, you know, I'm working on it, but it's not, again, it's not about the drugs. It goes back to all this shit. That's why, like, when I was a kid, I was addicted to basketball. But when you were like you had that moment of like, oh, I'm not going to make it. But prior to that, there was this part of you that was thinking, I can do it. I can do it.
Yeah.
But for me, I would practice and I was a really good point guard, but couldn't shoot. And that's helpful in basketball, getting it in the ring. And so I would practice and then I'd miss and I'd punch myself in the arm. And then naturally my shots got a little bit worse, didn't they? And then I'd miss more and more shots. And because I've got this ADD bipolar brain, I would go to bed and like, you know, people say counting sheep, I would visualize myself taking different shots. Clang, clang, clang. And I couldn't sleep until it went in. And it would take hours before it went in.
That's so crazy. And I still use words in my vernacular which people probably don't like, which I've said probably insane and crazy many times. So
it is.
Anyone.
It's unhealthy. Yeah, it's like, backward. It's retarded. Like it's impeded, whichever way you want to put it.
There's a lot of things like that, like where a lot of people say that, and it's. I've worked on ages, just another side of that. I've worked ages on getting gay out of my vocabulary.
Yeah, like, me too. I just dropped it before, and I'm actually going to edit it out because I don't.
I've never, but don't you fucking edit it
out. No, I'm going to edit all your shit out.
But it's interesting because it's like same sort of thing with people going like, okay, well, I don't mean it like that. I just say it, and it's like, cool, man. But, like, it means a lot to someone if you take it out of your vocabulary. What's it mean to you to get it out of yours?
Yeah,
like,
nothing.
It doesn't mean much for you to just say another word. You can even go say retarded and then go to anger someone else.
Yep.
But it's like, just stop saying gay. You're going to make anyone who is offended by that happy, and you're not really going to give it two thoughts, you know? And that's what I've really focused on, and I'm trying to get crazy, insane, all that sort of stuff out of my vocabulary as well. I got retard out, or that's retarded. Mm-hmm. I used to say that stuff all the time. Man, I used to say, oh, you'll probably edit this out, but I used to say fag a lot, and I'm like ashamed of myself. It's a different time, but
I get it, because like when I grew up, I shit you not, I'm only 32, but Eeny, Meeny, Miney, Moe wasn't Catch a Tiger by the time.
Yeah, that, no, I actually agree with that one too. That only just came in for me because I'm 25.
Yep.
When I was in primary school, that was the one. I think the teacher was like, hey, maybe say this one instead.
And I didn't even know what it meant.
But that's the thing. People's defense to that is like, oh, well, it shouldn't mean anything because I didn't know what it meant. And it's like, what? Like, just don't say it.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, look, we do put too much on words sometimes. Like, I think we're now having the backwards effect, you know, where it's like it's, the men, yeah. White men lives matter too and all that sort of shit.
Mm.
It's only because they feel like we've gone too far one way. But yeah. You have to go too far to get it back. Like, yeah, a lot of people were oppressed. Now it's like the majority, like the white straight male, is feeling oppressed. But we have to go that far so that in a couple of years it will bring itself back to neutral.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Then we'll all be happy. And you've got to do that sort of stuff. And that's what I've been doing with myself. Like, I even find myself when my dad might be like, because he's old school, he might be like, that's gay. And I'll be like, Dad, like, you can't say that. Or like, Australia says no. Like, I make a joke about it.
Yeah.
But I actually let them know. I'm like, hey, look, that's not okay. And you know me, I won't kill a conversation. I won't kill a complete flow. But I will put something in there that says, hey, let's go away from that word.
Yeah, yeah. I find the retarded one interesting, though, because I work with people with special needs, change their nappies, feed them.
Yeah, you were saying that.
Get assaulted by them. And if you're calling someone with special needs retarded, I'll punch you in the fucking head. But my problem is language. Like, to say an idea is retarded, sometimes your ideas are retarded. But my problem is, I don't use that word a hell of a lot, but it's the people that get offended. How many special people's asses have you wiped? How many people have you taught to speak? How many people have come at you with a knife because they're unable to communicate? Because I've had that happen almost every day at my job. And
yeah, that's recreational
outrage
offending. Yeah, it's a lot of times we get complaints in radio, and it's by someone going, I'm calling up because I heard this thing. I think someone could be offended by that. That's the fucking complaint.
Yeah,
that's like going, can you put your hands in your pocket because I think those hands could assault someone. Like, it's like nothing has happened, but they're offended because they think someone should be offended by it. And it sucks because they've now ruined that word. So
yeah.
If you tell me you're offended, I'm like, ugh. Like, it's just, it's natural now. Like, I'll try and be like, okay, I'm sorry. But it's a natural thing to go, ugh, you're offended. Like vegan, like CrossFit, like at smashed avocado. Like, they're those words now or phrases.
Triggered.
That are like, yeah, they make you just, and it sucks, but it's people that have overused it, been over offended. Now, if you told me, if I said, hey, that shit's retarded, and you said, like, hey, man, that's pretty hurtful. Can you please not say that? That has a bigger effect on me now than if you say, I'm offended. It's because people have ruined I'm offended.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. I am trying to get a lot of that stuff out of my vocabulary just because I grew up in Darwin and that's how we spoke.
Yeah, I'm from Central Queensland. Very similar.
Yeah.
Hey, man, look, I've got to get going. I've got to do an interview with some shithouse metalcore band that I don't have any idea what I'm going to ask them. So I'm not looking forward to it. I'd actually like to keep talking to you, but unfortunately, like we're saying, I actually get paid for these ones, so got to make some sacrifices, man.
Gangster. Man, I like fucking cleared my day, and I was like, I was chatting to him for ages. I think I'm like well behind in what I've got to do for actual work, but no, I had a lot of fun, and Yeah, man, not too many times the host has to wrap me up, but yeah.
Yeah, well, I was just sick of listening to you, man, you know?
No, it's fair. It's 100%. It's what a 25-year-old white straight male.
Yeah, I know.
Just by the way, is that not the most hated demographic in the world?
Yeah. You guys are all retarded.
Oh, Matt is in radio we call a perfect out.
Hey, man, look, what we've got to do, we've got to get you and Michael on the show as well.
Oh, for sure, man.
Yeah, and yeah, for sure. And hopefully when I get to Adelaide, pop in and see you in Mount Gambier, have some cuddles. I'll keep all my swearing to myself.
Yeah, and anyone else, no, find me on Instagram. We can have a chat. I'm always up for a chat with strangers. So
give me all your social media for your show and all that as well.
Oh, just follow at Mitchell Tinley on Instagram and find me on Facebook. Got a little comedy page there, and the rest will trickle down. I got a pretty good business set up there.
Yeah, and the Mitchell and Michael show.
Yeah, Mitchell and Michael show on Facebook. Yeah, just check that stuff out. Would appreciate your support. We got a podcast too. It's a lot more jovial and family friendly, but have a listen and a laugh on your way to work, man. Honestly, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Anytime you want me to have a chat, I'll come back on.
Oh, it's good to catch up with you, man. It's been too long. When's your fight?
August 4th is scheduled.
Oh, fuck. I'm in Queensland then.
Ah, you bitch.
All right. Is anyone filming it?
Yeah, it'll be on YouTube.
Oh, nice. All right. I'll be rooting for you anyway, man.
Thanks, bro. Take it easy.
Take
care. Ask the metal people about, I don't know, Napster. That's all I know.
I will. Okay.
Catch you later, brother.
Cheers, man. See ya.